Welcome, friends, to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're one of several 24, 25 or so around the world, in the United States, India, Europe, Africa, and even Haiti. And we are here to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded originally by the teachers, H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. Just a couple announcements. On Wednesday evenings, this Wednesday, we're beginning our study in the Bhagavad Gita, which is that great battle between the higher and the lower. It's written about a real battle, but it's allegorically about everyone's battle that they have in life. And the intro will be on this Wednesday, July 4th. And it's always very interesting to get the background on the Bhagavad Gita to put things in perspective. On Wednesday evenings, the door opens up at 5:15, and the library is open from 5:15 to 7:15. We have straight line theosophical books, and also various other various other religions. You can do comparative religious study. There's some books on science and math and just the humanities in general. And it's not a lending library, it's a reference library, but it's good to prepare for the evening's class if you have the time. You're certainly welcome to come in. There's a librarian there that will be able to direct you and answer any questions about the library. Also the book table is open before and after meetings. And we have straight line theosophical literature for sale at cost. There's no profit to be made whatsoever. Before we begin, also we are, all of the efforts at this lodge are voluntary. There's no coercion in any way, shape, or form. We don't try to get you to join. We're not even an organization. We don't have officers, bylaws, or whatnot. We're an association of students. But all efforts are voluntary, and they're all needed, whether they be time, money, or service. And there's no, as we said, there's, it's all goodwill offering. All are most needed, but there's no obligation implied of any sort. I think we got that out of the way. And before we're beginning a new study for the summer, and it runs through the end of July, and then we take the month of August off on Sundays only, we're closed. And then we pick up in September and on Sundays only, and on Wednesday nights we go throughout the entire year. And it is from a pamphlet called The Epitome of Theosophy. And it's, if you don't have a copy, it's at the usher's table there as you first come in the room. You're certainly welcome to grab a copy. There's this week is pages 3 to 6. That's on the right. That's this week's. And next week's on the other side of the table. So we will now read the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who wish to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So at this time, we're going to have a student volunteer who will summarize the first three pages. It's rather short. It's 3 1/4 pages here. So we'll have the part summarized, this historical note on the epitome of theosophy.
Theosophy, in its first, when it was first produced, it was not called the Epitome of Theosophy. It was very simply called a Theosophical Tract. And it was named by the Aryan Theosophical Society of New York City in 1887. And it is considered to be the earliest as well as the best condensed version of what the doctrines of the wisdom religion or theosophy puts forth. At the time, 1886 to 1888, when the epitome was produced, there had been almost like a resurgence of theosophy. A lot was going on. Madame Blavatsky's magazine, The Path, Mr. Judge's The Path was put out. Madame Blavatsky it says active effort in the West. She moved to London and commenced her magazine, Lucifer. The public announcement of the esoteric section, the foundation of the Blavatsky Lodge in London, and her publication of the Theosophical Doctrine, the Secret Doctrine, and the organization of the American section of the Theosophical Society. So all these things were going on all at the same time, and the epitome of theosophy, even in its small, immature form, was still considered an important part of all this resurgence. And it was so popular in the United States that there was a need, it felt, to also be produced in other places. So the Theosophical Publication Society in England requested that Mr. Judge kind of revamp his ideas for the track so that it could be produced in London. So he entirely rewrote the tract, and it was long enough to be published as a booklet, but the folks felt in London, before it was produced, felt as though it was too deep for the average mind. So needless to say, Mr. Judge was rather disappointed with these ideas, that it was considered too deep, and also the fact that the managers of the society in London felt as though they needed a stepping stone from what they call fiction to philosophy. And Mr. Judge says, there's a quote here by him, "I cannot agree with this opinion." And he felt as though he really couldn't change it at all, because it was not just written by him. He states that he had several students who know what the people need, helped him do it. And he felt as though it was at once comprehensive and fundamental. And he mentions that what he is writing, he says, those masters began to cause their servants to give out this matter in India. And when they did that, they did not begin with fiction, but they started with stern facts. And he felt as though these ideas, written as they were, would definitely fulfill the needs of earnest minds. He says, and there's a paragraph that's a quote of his, but he says, "If a contrary line be adopted, then we will not only disappoint the master, if that be possible, but we will, in a very large sense, be guilty of making false representations to a growing body of subscribers." So mainly, he felt as though the way he had written it, with the help of others, would be appropriate for the average mind at that time, for that earnest student, and that it should be the facts presented, not as if it would be a bridge from fiction to philosophy. So, with Mr. Judge's ideas, and he was supported by Madame Blavatsky, the managers in London did finally agree to issue, in the summer of 1888, the epitome of theosophy as written by Mr. Judge with no changes. So, and that is what we are lucky to be able to study for the summer.
Thank you. So there was a lot going on back in the latter years, the last part of the 19th century in London and in the United States and in India, for that matter, because they were the three centers of theosophical effort. And as we've mentioned in the past, we have we have three times a year we give respect to the teachers that brought us this philosophy, which is, it comes from the masters of wisdom. We really won't go into too much detail today, but there were Well, the United Lodge of Theosophists, which we just had ULT Day recently, was, you know, it's meant to give gratitude for the founding of this organization, not organization, association. Association of Students. And that's very confusing when you, it's we're organized, but we're not an organization. Go ahead.
All right, so this epitome of theosophy, where obviously this is just totally an intro, so it's not getting into theosophy.
Right, yes.
But what is the epitome of theosophy? What's it going to do? And what is this about the Aryan, what's in the Aryan Theosophical Society?
Well, that was the group that was in New York City at the time. That was Mr. Judge's group, the Aryan Theosophical Society. So they had a charter from the main headquarters or whatever, which by that time was in India. It had moved from New York to India back in 1879. So what was the rest of your question?
Well, our question has to do with, you know, what's going on? What is the purpose of the epitome of theosophy? How does it fit in? Why were they doing what they're doing?
Okay, well, there was an effort that was put forth as we were just trying to give a small sketch. There were many attacks, personal attacks, against HPB, and they were coordinated with some disaffected members and the missionaries in India. And then in England, there were personality feuds between two factions. And the epitome and the secret doctrine, there was a great effort made after the initial 10 years, 10, 11 years of theosophical effort in England and in the United States. We have the epitome of theosophy, which gives, you know, it's a sketch of the whole philosophy. And then we have the magazine, The Path, that Mr. Judge started in 1886. And in England, we have HPB's Lucifer magazine, and we have The Secret Doctrine coming out in 1888, Light on the Path. There was this great upwelling of effort, and but you know, it was to try to make things more philosophical, we think. In the back.
Yeah, I was wondering, on page 5, I think that message from the master, that one sentence. We are not seeking to cater to a lot of fiction readers and curiosity hunters, but to the pressing needs of earnest minds. I think, you know, fiction readers never influence a nation's progress. That also brings out a very important point on why
Yeah, basically they wanted Mr. Judge to dumb it down. They wanted something, it was too deep, they wanted something light. And we suppose that a lot of people were not familiar with Eastern religions and at all. Buddhism, theosophy was new, these were all new terms. Karma and reincarnation were new concepts. So we can understand how some people would have felt that way. Keep it light, you know, maybe keep it light, get them to come, and then we'll go deeper once they come in here. But Mr. Judge did not agree with that opinion at all, because as HPB has said, Theosophy is not for the mentally lazy or obtuse. So those people that were looking for, and they did lose a lot of membership in the beginning. Well, there was a great swell of membership, and it was connected to spiritualism, which there were many investigations into spiritualism, and then it came out that it was not philosophical whatsoever. It was just a lot of mamby-pamby spirit gazing and looking at shells of the dead, not their actual spirit. So a lot of people became disaffected because they rather would stay with the spiritualists, which is not philosophy. There's no philosophy in spiritualism whatsoever. In the back?
Well, our educational system concentrated very deeply on ancient history, the theater, Shakespeare, and some of the greatest writers of all the races of Europe, Asia, and so forth. People were flocked to the theater to witness these programs. Called it entertainment. Well, what is done here is that these stories are about you and your responsibility. It's a drama, but it is not fiction or the Shakespearean theater or anything like that. What we try to do is stimulate self-investigation. And we recall in our younger days, complaining to a older person about certain responsibilities. And I said, why me? And this person said, why not you? And but I would like me.
Well, that has to do with karma. When we ask the question, why me? Why is all this happening to me? And that, in fact, is the main motivator for pretty much everybody to study philosophy or theosophy is, you know, why? Why is this happening? What are the great questions of life?
So then, for benefit of some of the new people that are here, can we get an idea of, you know, what the purpose is for the movement? Like, can we just hear what the three objects are and a little bit of comments and questions about the three objects?
Sure, we can talk about the three objects. We are to form the universal brotherhood of humanity, to study ancient literature and philosophy, and also the investigation of psychism, but the investigation of psychism, but not to practice psychism. Yes?
I think it's to form a nucleus for the universal brotherhood.
Right, the nucleus.
But that's an association of like-minded souls that share in the same understanding of the universe and who we are and the realities that we don't talk about every day. But the reality is that we're one, and that we're so connected we dare not look.
So we are all one, we are connected, that there's an illusion of separateness, but that everything in nature is connected. In the back?
And we also know that in the 20th century, the term Aryan became discredited. So back in the 1800s then, in the second paragraph talks about the Aryan Theosophical Society of New York City. Can it be explained as to what the original idea of Aryan was?
Well, yeah, the Aryans were from Aryavarta or India. Like one of the terms for India is, and India was anciently called Aryavarta, which is, you know, the land of the Aryans. And their philosophy, the Brahmins, who were the keepers, the teachers, and the priests that kept the philosophy. It was a strange, lead up to World War II, there was this whole Aryan myth and Aryan race about blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, it had no real basis. It was more or less based on Norse mythology, but it was a hodgepodge. It was a little bit of everything, but it was all convoluted and twisted and the swastika, which is an ancient symbol that's found all over the world, that was used as a symbol, which most people now think is a sign of hate. But it just shows you that how powerful, like, good and evil are the world's eternal ways, light and darkness, how things can be perverted. But also the name Lucifer, by the church, Lucifer was the bringer of life. Lucifer is not Satan, although they're conflated with one another. And there was a lot of objection about HPB's choice of the name Lucifer for her magazine. That's the background. That's a little bit of the background.
So that brings us to the second object, this idea of this Aryan Theosophical Society, because that second object is the study of the world's sciences and religions and philosophies, both ancient and modern. And in the Key to Theosophy, she says, in particular, the vindication of ancient Aryan literature. And she explains Aryan literature as Hinduism and as Zoroastrianism. What is it about this ancient literature that's important for the Theosophical Society to bring to the fore in the West?
Well, because they were theosophical. There were other theosophical movements in the past. And there's been efforts put forth in every century since 1375, when Tsongkhapa gathered the adepts together, and an effort was to be made in the last 25 years of every century. And what he established the Gelugpas, or the yellow caps, and he threw out the red caps. There were many thousands of sham monks and priests and whatnot. The ideas are the same as in Theosophy. Go ahead.
Reincarnation and karma?
Right. Reincarnation and karma, certainly. We talk about these ideas all the time. We're not here for the first time, we're soul that has bodies. We're not a body that has a soul. We're not concerned with the resurrection of the body. The body is the least important of all our principles. Our real body is the astral body, or the design body, where all our organs are really located. Karma is, you reap what you sow. I mean, these ideas are all in the Bible, but they're not emphasized. What's emphasized is all the material and everything that has to do with consolidating power over others and keeping people in the dark. you weren't allowed to learn to read unless you wanted to be a priest for many, many centuries. They were the only ones who were educated. And in the East, the Brahmins kept the masses ignorant. They were the priesthood also. So there's examples in the East and the West. But so Zoroastrianism and Hinduism, which are you know, there's, that has to do with the nature of fire, that everything is, and spirit. Yes.
So it's an essence saying that man is divine in his potential, that what we see of man now is really more of the animal nature, of that nature around us, and that through will and imagination and study, one begins to understand that one is part of that light, that our consciousness is all the same. We just are different portals on which we are perceiving it. But I think what we're in a state of transition. But that, what's that transition to? Well, it's an opening of mind. Our mind is beginning to become more porous.
Yes, we're to make the mind porous to the dictates of the soul. We were impressed with these ideas. Early humanity was impressed with the arts and the sciences by those who had perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution. And it's in our nature. We're here to try to draw it out, to uncover it, to realize that we've been sold a bill of goods, as it were. That and it's for those, I mean, it's up to us to reclaim that, and we're here to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy, that you know, we are not our bodies, that we are spirit, that we reincarnate from age to age through long periods and cycles of evolution, that there are four great ages. There's, you know, using the English terms, there's the gold, the silver, the bronze, and the iron. You know, there are Sanskrit names for them. And that this age we are in, the Kali Yuga, which means black, the dark age, is one where everything is topsy-turvy and upside down, as it were, and we have to work harder, but that we can make greater progress in this age than in any other age if we're willing to work for it.
What part will the three fundamental propositions play in helping us to grasp this new
paradigm? Well, that's interesting because one of the, it's, the original Theosophical tract, which was only 6 or 8 pages, was first published, and then they asked for more, and Mr. Judge put this together. And it's very good and very concise exposition of the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy of theosophy. It's a little more expanded in the beginning of the first book of The Secret Doctrine, from like pages 14 through 17 or 18, that, you know, that there's deity, law, and evolution, and they are what we study constantly here. We are, you know, we come from one source, that it's omniscient, omnipotent, it's all powerful, all knowing, it's eternal, but it's not, it's a principle, it's not a person, it's not anthropomorphic. We can't, you know, it's, we're not trying to appease this God in heaven, this superhuman, gigantic male who has a temper that we are always trying to, you know, we're always trying to please because we don't want his wrath. That's whatever wrath that we experience is we've created that through 18 million years of incarnating as mind beings, male and female, that you know, we have the manas, the mind principle lit up in us, and that's, there was the lighting up of minds, which is like the lighting of many candles from one candle, and this was done during the early period of our evolution. So we have this deific principle, which we can say more what it's not than what it is, because the finite cannot comprehend the infinite. In a sense, we use it as a basis and a substratum for all of our philosophical thought. We go from universals to particulars, and then back again. Then we go back to the particulars. But ever since Aristotle broke away from Plato, and he was not an initiate, and he wanted to create he wanted something of his own. He wanted his own philosophy. And the Western world has been under his sway since, by and large. It's in the beginning of the Renaissance in Italy, and like in the latter part, like in the 13, 1400s, some of Plato's works were being translated, and the Platonism started to filter in. But the Aristotelian point of view is that we just go from particulars to universals. But what happens is, with all the specialty in science, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with specializing, but we need generalists too. We need people to look at the whole picture. But people get all in their own little cul-de-sac of science, and then they end up arguing against other views, but they've specialized so much in one area that they've kind of backed themselves into an alley. So we have law, which is karma and reincarnation, and then, you know, we also have deity, law, and evolution, of course. Yes, evolution. Yes.
But sometimes I feel overwhelmed with all this knowledge, all this, not, and all this understanding, and every summer we study the Bhagavad Gita, and that is like a respite. It says, if you act and have this attitude, and you don't look for your personal rewards, well, it's a treatise for everyone on this journey, and to imagine in his own way what this means. And it's just the incorporation of all these ideas. But you understand it at a different level with your heart. And then,
right.
You know, by living compassionately and helping others and not looking for the fruits of your labor and being devoted or single-minded.
Yes. The little intro ends with that this wonderful epitome of the only doctrines which have the power to heal by teaching the nations. So these ideas are sorely needed, and, you know, this is the epitome of theosophy. It is truly something which, if we master, will have a very good basis for further study. Because theosophy is that philosophy that's, it's the ocean of philosophy. It's like an ocean. It's shallow at the shores. It will not overwhelm the comprehend, you know, the child, not overwhelm a child's mind, but it will give depth and breadth to the deepest minds as well.
Back. And we wonder if Ms. I mean, we certainly can't speak for Mr. Judge, but we wonder, I mean, what the list of everything that was going on at that time, and the fact that the Secret Doctrine was published, and she had, and HPV had already published ISIS, we feel as though he put this together as like a, it's like the ocean of theosophy is, you know, is an easier way to understand the secret doctrine. And this was a wonderful introduction for people.
Yes, it was a primer that came out 6 years before the Ocean of Theosophy, which is a synthesis of the Secret Doctrine, which had come out, you know, just a year after, very shortly after. They were, you know, they were working on the Secret Doctrine at the time. The Secret Doctrine was being written while this came out. So you could say it was, you know, it was, ISIS Unveiled was very popular in 1877, but there had been a lapse of 10 years before anything major came out.
It was mentioned earlier in the first fundamental proposition that this idea of the divine is a principle, not a person, yet, you know, so many of the religions emphasize that it's a person and refer to him and what he wants you to do, what he doesn't want you to do. Why does it matter, or why is it important to think of it as principle? Why can't we think of it as a divine being?
Because the principle is within us. It's, we're part of that. It's everywhere. It's throughout nature, and that it's latent in the, like in the rock and in the plants and the animal. It becomes much more manifest. We have, you know, human beings are self-conscious. You know, there's consciousness in every life form, but in human beings is self-consciousness. But if we're looking at something outside of ourselves, then we're looking for something to save us, and then we don't have to do the work. We can just sit back and say, I believe, you know, I'm born again, and... or I can do a deathbed confession to a priest, and it's all wiped away, and that we only live one time, and then we're in heaven for eternity, and that these are all dangerous fictions, and they don't do the world any good. We're in this, you know, the world is in the shape it is in because of this doctrine of vicarious atonement and all the materialism, and people not wanting to really think for themselves and think things through and treat and follow the golden rule. And if we all follow the golden rule, we would have a heaven on earth.
So then if it makes so much more sense to view the divine as a principle in nature, since it's all, and then you followed up right there with follow the golden rule, that sounds pretty close to the second fundamental proposition. Why is law so important to be involved in this philosophy? What does that have to do with studying philosophy?
Well, law rules, it's absolute, it's just, it can be merciful, and there are, you know, the elder brothers who work behind the scenes, the masters, they can hold back some of the most damaging karma, but they can't, only to a degree. They can only influence some of the minor currents. They can't, because we need to learn the lessons. So karma can seem very cruel, can seem red in tooth and claw at times. It can be overwhelming. But this law it's immutable, just as deity is immutable, so is law. It's absolute and it's immutable, and it will not be mocked. Just like in the Bible, it says, you know, it will not be mocked. You may make an apparent mockery of it for some time, but you're going to get your comeuppance. Can I, in the back?
On the last page of this handout for today.
Yes.
In the very first paragraph, it talks about if a contrary line be adopted, then we will not only disappoint the master, if that be possible. So who is the master?
Yes. That's another thing. The master is really within us as well. It says when the student is ready, the master appears. Now, there are masters who can be embodied, but generally work behind the scenes. There were two masters in particular that worked with HPB and Judge, and they wrote letters to others as well. That they're the custodians of the philosophy, that even if all the books and all the records were completely destroyed, they are the keepers of it. It's in the Akashic records. This wisdom cannot be destroyed as much as one would try, as much as certain vested interests might try, because it's a threat to their own power. But in the first chapter of The Ocean of Theosophy, it talks about that if the masters were to work openly in this period of time, that they would either be worshipped as gods or hunted as devils. They wouldn't be understood. And that it is up for us, through practicing the theosophical ethics and morals and the philosophy, learning the philosophy and being altruistic, that we will eventually, if we follow the path, become students, direct students of a master. But they generally do not work with individuals. They work behind the scenes. And there's been examples given to where, you know, it could have been that certain despotic tyrants have acted in a way which was illogical, and it resulted in their downfall. So so that they can influence anyone, good, bad, or indifferent. But theosophy does not say that you have to believe in the masters, but we think the philosophy makes a lot more sense. If we believe in the possibilities of the masters, which is the possibility of our own perfection, that man is not a poor, miserable sinner, but that he may be poor and miserable right now, and he may be a sinner as well, but that is not who we really are, that we are divine in nature and in potential, and that we can manifest this potentiality, and that we can perfect ourselves up to the degree, and perfection is a relative term, up to the degree that is possible in each period of evolution. Yes?
I think we've heard this said, look within, for thou art Buddha, that we are, we just don't believe it.
Right.
We don't believe it, and therefore we always act from the lower, and that's why we're in this state of transition. are just, our spiritual consciousness is becoming awake, is being woke up. And with these ideas, it just hurries that progress for the entire race.
Yes, a little bit of leaven leavens the whole loaf, as it were.
When we first started studying theosophy and heard this idea of masters, it kind of intuitively, it kind of made sense, but at the same time, it didn't make sense because there seemed something special, different, and unique about them until an older student taught us, really, it's a universal idea. There's not a religion on the face of the earth that doesn't have a master at its head, such as Jesus Christ or Buddha or whoever. But that the difference in the theosophical movement is we're not trying to create a religion, nor was the intention of masters to create religion, but rather just to teach people how to live and think properly.
We're not to worship them. They are our elder brothers. They are human. They're humans who've managed to perfect themselves. And they give forth the hope that we too can perfect ourselves, that it is possible. In the back.
And one of the things that the philosophy speaks of is the fact that the other religions talk about being given a soul or being given grace.
Right.
Whereas the philosophy speaks of that we are soul and that these masters have been able to access that idea, that principle of soul to a higher level than we have. But we have that probability that at some point in the future we can be like them. But it's not as if we're being given that, that you know, we have to pray in order to get the grace. It's that we are a soul.
Yes, we are soul. And if in studying the philosophy and becoming an active altruist, we become companions of the masters because they need companions to do the work. They cannot do it all. Even Buddha was not a complete success. And that's something we need to keep in mind. Even the Buddha, the greatest soul that we know of that's ever manifested, was not a complete success. The world is really too polluted and too dangerous for them to show themselves, as it was said, be worshipped as gods or hunted as devils. And if they were worshipped as gods, one faction would worship them, the other faction would be against them, and there's enough wars in the world as it is.
Well, we've heard what was said, and we also understand that being a human being, a thinker, it's often been said that the highest form of existence in the universe. Well, we often start, our greatest responsibility was to ourselves and our family. You mean we have a greater responsibility because we are that crown piece of evolution.
Right. Yes, with knowledge comes responsibility. If we just keep the knowledge to ourselves and we don't act on it, it atrophies and dies, really. And then we think that the legacy will be that we may not come in contact with these ideas for an incarnation or two. It may elude us. We may, in a sense, suffer for not doing our duty as we see fit. So we are going to be, it's a little early yet, but have a few minutes. Yes, the epitome is a very nice, concise, you know, it's not light. It is It is something that is requires a lot of thought, and which we will. Here's something we highlighted from page 19. Ordinary men continuously, recklessly, and wickedly are making these events sure to come to pass. But the sages, the Mahatmas, and the adepts of the good law make only such pictures as are in accordance with divine law, because they control the production of their thought. So, yeah, whatever is out there, we can undo. We can make right. You know, we're here to. It's a flyer in the realm of reality, as it were, theosophy.
So then we talked about those propositions, the first of which we get a better idea of understanding what deity is by releasing the idea that it's a man in a chair, but universal. And then we talked about law, and one example was, you know, the golden rule, which is not just an idea, but it's a law to live by. And then we started talking about the masters, and you were saying that that's something that we can attain to. Wouldn't that be directly related to your proposition?
Yes, evolution. Yes, they have evolved. They have perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution. So, but they've made the great sacrifice of coming back. Just like, you know, we can, there are a lot of Buddhists that believe that the goal is to attain nirvana. And, you know, nirvana is a choice, but once one does attain to nirvana, then we have no connection with this earth or our fellow human beings whatsoever. We're cut off. We're in our own little bliss, which is not forever. It too is temporary, but it could last for hundreds of thousands of years or longer, who knows. So then there are those that renounce that, and that's what theosophy recommends. Is it's called the path of woe. You know, it's much suffering now, but for an even greater reward and at the end of it all. Yes? Hear my humble cry.
It sort of points out of the way. And we walk in here in this little state to think about gratitude and humility.
Yes, gratitude and humility. Thank you.
What these topics point out.
Yes, we should have gratitude and humility because they suffered. They're the ones who brought us these teachings. They suffered so many attacks, so many, you know, from their, who they thought were their friends, too. They turned against them.
Well, the Gita says, you go ahead, try this philosophy. Go ahead, try to live this life. And you'll see what that means, because people become opposed to these ideas because they're contrary to how they see themselves.
It can be very lonely, and that's why we have these rooms, these associations of students that are trying to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood. And there are many different nuclei, you know, there are many different groups, but this one is universal. It's not geared towards a particular group of humanity. It's universal in scope and nature. So we need to end here. Next week we'll be getting into the, you know, the real meat of it. And on Wednesdays, don't forget the intro to the Bhagavad Gita this Wednesday, July 4th. Be some fireworks.